This is number 0073, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0073. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Tim O'Brien from Ripley's Believe It or Not is back on the show to talk about their latest book, Ripley's Believe It or Not, Enter If You Dare. They never seem to run out of material for their annual coffee table books.
You know, weirdness never slows down. And luckily, with our brand name, when people think of weird, they think of Ripley. So we are kept a good supply of weirdness and bizarreness through the year.
Tom Winkler is the guy behind the hysterically violent online game, WhackYourBoss.com. As popular as the game is, you won't find an app for it on Apple.
I did do a lot of work submitting it to Apple as an app. They took the time to call me and tell me, don't ever submit something like this again. Thank you. And don't even try to submit it with green blood and call it Zombie Boss. And they didn't even send me an email. Normally they would send an email, and I think they didn't even want it like a paper trail. They called me and told me verbally, no thank you.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. You know, he never ventured out to Times Square on New Year's Eve.
No, absolutely not. You only do it once in a lifetime. You never do it again because it's usually, although it wasn't this year, biting cold. You're in a big crowd. There's no place to make a pee, no place to get anything to eat. And the guy standing next to you has probably just had a garlic pizza. So it's not the kind of thing you do more than once. I did it the last time, I think it was in 1921.
And of course, we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0073, was Phil White, administrative coordinator at Global News here in Montreal, and that's the other place that I work. He's also the front man for the Montreal rock industrial band, The Violent Drag, and you can get free downloads of their 8 music tracks at their website, www.theviolentdrag.bandcamp.com. And of course, you'll find links to that website on my website, which is thestufffile.com. Again, that's www.theviolentdrag.bandcamp.com. And thank you very much, Phil, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Yes, indeed. We start off with researchers. Now, they've learned from reports in early 2010 of a new monkey species in Myanmar with a nose so recessed that it habitually collects rainfall and thus constantly sneezes. However, according to an October National Geographic dispatch, by the time scientists arrived to investigate, natives had eaten the monkey. Oops. Apparently, the sneezing makes them easy for hunters to detect. Meanwhile, researchers studying a rare species of Vietnamese lizard had an easier time in November. After learning of the species and rushing to the local province, a two-man team from La Sierra University in Riverside, California, found the lizards being routinely served in several restaurants during their lunch buffets. So, there you go. You want to study the lizards? Just grab a plate. We go to Florida for our next story. Authorities south of Tampa say a man confessed to robbing a bank after his wife saw a surveillance photo on the evening news and alerted them. A camera got a clear shot of the man with a ponytail and scruffy beard robbing the First Bank of Bradenton. The robber got away, but Manatee County Sheriff's officials got a break that evening when Afra Sandifar saw a news report about the robbery. She called authorities and told them her husband was the robber. That's when 45-year-old Troy Sandifar fled the couple's apartment. Deputies stopped his vehicle, but Troy Sandifar refused to get out. They say he ingested what appeared to be drugs before they were able to arrest him. He was taken to hospital where authorities say he confessed. Gee, I think that relationship is probably over. What do you think? Yeah. Elsewhere, Nicholas Hodge, age 31, was arrested in Winona County, Minnesota, in November after he entered the home of an acquaintance at 2:40 a.m. and refused to leave, complaining that a person who lived there owed him something. Now, according to the deputy's report, Hodge was cuffed while sitting on a toilet in the kitchen. The deputy added, "I'm not sure why they had a toilet in the kitchen." I'm not sure either. Moving right along, we go to what I like to refer to as idiots in the nanny state, and this is not to be confused with idiots of the day. That's a whole other thing coming later in the program. Parents of the 450 pupils aged 3 to 11 years at Applecroft Primary School in Welwyn Garden City, England, were given individualized yearbooks recently with all the children's faces obscured by black bars over their eyes, except for photos of the recipient's own children, which had no obstructions. The precautions, described by one parent as creepy, like kids were prisoners, were ordered by the headmistress, Vicky Parsley, who feared that clear photos of children would inevitably wind up in child pornography. Now, last year, Parsley famously prohibited parents from taking photographs during school plays of their own kids or any others for the same fear. Could you imagine, by the way, getting a yearbook where the only picture you could see clearly was your own? Wow. Doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose of a yearbook in the first place? I'm wondering what kind of creepy childhood this Ms. Parsley is covering up of her own. Or maybe she feels guilty about something. Either way, she has issues, and the rest of the school, 450 pupils and their families, are dealing with it. Okay, moving right along, I've often said that while I admire those who wish to skydive, personally, I don't see the need to jump out of a perfectly functioning aircraft. So, you have to admire the irony of this next story. Three people were killed and two others injured when a plane carrying, ironically, a group of skydivers crashed. The plane went down in south central Louisiana. A pilot and four skydivers were aboard the single-engine plane when it crashed shortly after takeoff. The plane was about 250 feet in the air when it lost power, and the pilot attempted to make it back to the runway. When the plane crashed, the wreckage caught fire and three-fourths of the plane was burned. The three victims died at the scene. Now, when you get to the pearly gates wearing a parachute and you were in a plane crash, you have some explaining to do. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest, under the headline of Least Competent Criminals in the Thank Goodness for Narcissists division, we have a couple for you. Murder suspect Earl Barranco, age 24, was arrested in Charlotte, North Carolina in November, 3 weeks after allegedly killing a man in New York City in a diner. Barranco was spotted at a Charlotte Bobcats basketball game mugging for the arena's Jumbotron while decked out in the distinctive jewelry he wore during the alleged murder. At the next Bobcats game, a few days later, with police monitoring that same seat, Barranco was arrested. And Dennis Davis, age 40, and his wife were convicted in October in Britain's Staines Magistrate Court of manufacturing a line of pirated music CDs. Davis initially denied ownership of the pirated stash, but was unable to explain why the CDs bore his company's label with his own photo on it. Love thyself, implicate thyself. Okay, let's get to our first guest on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? The folks at Ripley's put out some really great books, and the latest yearbook that is out now is called Ripley's Believe It or Not, Enter If You Dare. On the line to talk to us about the book is Tim O'Brien, Ripley's VP of Communications, who is also one of the hosts of the Ripley's radio show, Ripley Radio, an on-demand oddcast. Tim joins us via Skype-to-Skype communications. Hi, Tim. Nice to have you back on the show.
Hey, thanks, Peter. It's always fun to be with you here.
And as I said, those books are always great, the latest one being out, Enter If You Dare. Tell us what's interesting and different about this one.
Just about everything is different. I know that's what I'm supposed to say, but when we sit down to plot these books out year after year, we always wonder whether we're going to find anything. But every year we come up with 2,500 new believe it or nots and 500 plus photos. So, you know, weirdness never slows down. And luckily with our brand name, when people think of weird, they think of Ripley. So we are kept a good supply of weirdness and bizarreness through the year.
Now, I understand some of the stories include the situation with a Wisconsin man who spent 17 years building a sports car in his cellar.
Well, I think that goes along more stupidity than it does bizarreness. But yeah, he decided that he wanted to build a sports car. So what do you do when you want to build a sports car, right? You go into your basement to build your Lamborghini. And you spend 17 years buying all the parts, and then, aha, it's done. It's time for me to take it for a pet test spin. Then you realize that it's in your basement. You can't get it off the steps. So he had to pay thousands of dollars to have a backhoe come in, take dirt out from the side of his house, bash in the side of his house, create a special ramp to pull his car out, then to rebuild his house. So
wow.
That is, I don't think I would do that. You know, would you?
Well, you know, I've heard of stories of people having a similar situation building boats. But the thing I've never understood, especially considering this took 17 years, is that if you're so focused on working on your pet project that you don't realize what you've done, that's one thing. But doesn't anybody come by the house, any friends, any relatives, and say the obvious thing, how are you getting this out?
You know, you're right. You want to say, after you spend all this money, you want to ask your friends, okay, where were you guys when I needed you?
Now, other things in the book, I understand. There's a woman who needed something to wear to a party, so she made a dress out of salami and bacon. This wasn't Lady Gaga, was it?
You know, that's funny, because Lady Gaga got such tremendous press out of this dress. And the Chicago lady had created this almost 2 years prior, and we've actually got a photograph of her in our book wearing it. So we were able to cap in on a little bit of PR on that by putting a release out the same day and talking to the media saying, hey, you know, Lady Gaga was cool, but she wasn't quite the first one on this. So yeah, and we just wish we would have had it in last year's book, because we had the material but just didn't have room to work it in.
In this day and age of social networking and everyone on YouTube and everyone trying to draw attention, and also with the name Ripley's, which has a history of showcasing this kind of stuff, do you ever concern or worry about the fact that some people might be doing things just to get into your publication?
That is a absolute true statement, Peter. We worry about that all the time, because some fools out there will do anything to get their little 15 minutes. And, you know, like I've said before, not too many people actually set out to be in Ripley's. You hear people saying, hey, I want to be in Guinness. I'm going to set this world record. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that and get in Guinness. But if you look at our book, you'll see that most of the people that are in our Ripley's books and in our cartoon don't really set out to be who they are or what they've done. You know, like the lady with 8,000 piercings on her body. I mean, she obviously did not do that just to get into Ripley's. But she probably did it so she could break a record and get into Guinness. And we try very, very strongly every year to do a little backstory check on most of these people. And if we do know that, especially if they went out on their own and did something dangerous or stupid, we will ignore them. But if somebody wants to, you know, like we've got a 4-foot by 8-foot portrait, speaking of Lady Gaga, made out of these airsoft BBs. And they're different color BBs. And, you know, that person obviously set out to make the biggest portrait ever of Lady Gaga in BBs. Well, that's something we totally embrace on something like that. But stupidity, we will not put up with. This is not Jackass movie.
Do you often marvel not only at the ingenuity of human beings, but the perseverance of it all? I mean, we make fun of the guy who spent 17 years in his basement building a car, but that takes a certain amount of drive, pardon the pun, to do it. Like the guy who spent 15 years and 4 million matchsticks to build a model of an oil rig?
That's awesome. you wonder about that. And also, we've got a space shuttle, the Challenger spaceship that someone made. It's a 14 foot long by like 6 foot tall out of 600,000 wooden matchsticks. And it took him 15 years to do. And this guy that made the oil well rig, you just wonder why and how they could ever come up with that kind of time to do. I wish I had the time to create something like that.
It's amazing human ingenuity. And speaking of ingenuity, or maybe non-humans, you do have some other interesting things in there, like a real-life fat cat in England who weighed in at a whopping 22 pounds.
You know, that's when we found that out, we almost thought animal cruelty, you know? That's the diet that they gave the thing, you know, the cat, believe it or not, loves cheese and onion potato chips. Yeah, I can't. My cat, after we put this in the book, I got some cheese and onion potato chips and gave them to my cats, and they wouldn't even lick them. They just ignored them. So, and one cool thing about this particular lady who owns this cat, it was a 22-pound cat, which is huge. And what they did is that when the story came out and the papers started picking up around the UK, that there was an animal veterinarian school that actually created an obesity program for animals. And they went to this cat and brought the cat into this obesity program. So we haven't checked in lately. So hopefully he's lost a little weight.
One of the things I always marvel at about these books, and I've seen them over the years, is that not only are they interesting, they're beautiful. I mean, the pictures are great. The layout is amazing. They are certainly conversation pieces on anyone's coffee table.
They really are, Peter. And, you know, the fun thing about this is when I found out back in 2004 that we were going to be bringing all of our publishing in-house, I was a little concerned because up until that point, we had always licensed out all of our work. You know, we would compile the content and then just give it to somebody, and then we would see the final book after, because they would buy license for it. You know, Scholastic still does. They put out a yearly compendium. But this is the absolutely the ultimate, I think, in our book, with the whole concept of all the photographs. And, probably a lot of your listeners are familiar with the old-time cartoon with the old cartoon books, I should say, of Ripley's, the little pocket books that used to buy for 75 cents a buck or whatever, and it'd be on pulp paper, and it'd be little pen and ink drawings. A lot of people still think of Ripley when they think of those kind of books. But, you know, these new books, like you say, are gorgeous. They really are. They're what you call a coffee table size book. They're full color photographs inside, and we spent a lot of money on getting rights for some of these photographs. I was really amazed at the price tag that we paid for this present book to get some of these photo rights. You know, some photos will cost us $4,000 or $5,000 a piece just to get the rights to put in our book. But people pointed out, all of our reviews that we get, people will look at the pictures and talk about that almost as much as some of the unbelievable facts. So we do that. And then also our covers. We have amazing covers. What we've created are holographic 3D covers. They're hardcover. And what they are 3D images. And most of the time, you know, you need glasses to see 3D. But what we've got is we have actually built the lenticular lens lenses that you need to see 3D. We've actually built those right into the book cover. So you're looking through the lens at the image, and it's quite stunning. I mean, I love to go to the big box retailers who have these huge displays every year. And, you know, we've either got a book cover that the eyeballs follow you. We got cue balls that actually roll on the front cover. And people will walk by and just kind of give it a cursory look. And then they stop and give it the old comic double take. And it really catches the eye. It really does. So thank you for saying they're beautiful, because we certainly think they are.
And they certainly are a prized possession for anyone who has them. The latest book is called Ripley's Believe It or Not, Enter If You Dare. I thank you very, very much, Tim, for being on the program with us.
Absolutely, Peter. Anytime. I love your show, and you're doing a great job. Keep it up.
Tim O'Brien from Ripley's Believe It or Not. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0073, and you'll find links to the Ripley site and to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Coming to you from Canada, the land of universal healthcare, colorful money, and the correct spelling of the word theater. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we will talk to Tom Winkler, the man behind WhackYourBoss.com. Great website. Also, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. We have an idiot of the day, of course, and lots more stuff, including stuff right here, right now, in the second section of our Stuff File news. Police in Delaware say a man broke into a house, got drunk, and couldn't make his way back outside, so he called 911 for help. Newcastle County police say 44-year-old John Finch was trapped in the home in part because he'd broken into it before back in April. That led the homeowner to change the lock so that a key was required even on the inside. Police say no one was home when Finch broke in again through a rear window. He stayed for a few days drinking 3 bottles of gin and 2 bottles of whiskey. When he tried to leave, he was too drunk to climb back out of the window, so he called 911. He was arrested, and now Finch faces charges in both break-ins. So now he'll get to live in a place where he also needs a key to get out. That's irony for you. Yeah. Meanwhile, in Chicago, 40-year-old Anna Perez, she also called 911, but she called it to try to get police to scare her boyfriend into proposing to her. When she made the call, she claimed her boyfriend was attacking her, but when police arrived, she changed her story, admitting that she was just trying to scare her boyfriend into marrying her. Amazingly, the police were not the least bit amused by her story and promptly charged her with disorderly conduct. Police Captain Ronald Pontecore said, "Officers raced to the scene, believing a woman was in danger, only to find out it's something ridiculous like that." Even more amazing, the boyfriend apparently had no intention of marrying Ms. Perez and was actually in the process of breaking up with her. Gee, do you think it's really over? Finished? Kaput? Yeah, so do I. It's good to enjoy your accomplishments. You know, whether you graduate from university or community college or high school or simply get your GED, it's good to acknowledge that. John T. Nealon, Jr., age 29, was proud of his achievement. So proud, in fact, that the man from Vinton, Virginia, hung his GED certificate in his garage right above his methamphetamine cooking rig. When officers followed a tip and found the meth lab, they knew immediately who they were looking for. Nealon escaped to the woods, taking only a tent and a bowl of macaroni and cheese. They were able to track him down when his 15-year-old girlfriend went to resupply him. Yeah, you heard right. He's 29. His girlfriend is 15. Icky on so many levels. So now he's attending a new school, the School of Hard Knocks. Looking forward to that next graduation for you there, John. Enjoy. In Spokane, Washington, 42-year-old Richard Thomas did something kind of amazing. He walked into a Taco Bell restaurant, walked straight past employees, and stepped inside the restaurant's walk-in cooler, where he locked himself inside. Police had to remove the cooler's door to get inside, where they found Mr. Thomas quite dead. However, he does not appear to have died as a result of exposure, and there was no sign of violence on the body. An autopsy is pending. Wonder what business will be like this week at that Taco Bell. Ew. And under the headline of Yikes, Gloria Clark, age 62, was charged in the death of her 98-year-old mother in St. George, South Carolina in December after the mother's body was found amongst squalid conditions at her home. Now, Clark denied she had been neglectful. The mother's pet parrot might have disagreed, however. According to the police report, the parrot in the mother's bedroom continually squawked, mimicking, "Help me! Help me!" followed by the sound of laughter. Yeah, she's going to jail. And if she had her way, I'm sure that parrot would be going into the oven. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, before we get to our next guest, in the aftermath of the WikiLeaks fiasco, the U.S. government put together an 11-page document on how to get various government agencies to prevent future leaks. Well, guess what? That document has been leaked to MSNBC as the irony gods howl. The document, which was sent to senior officials at all agencies that use classified material, instructed the agencies to, quote, assess what your agency has done or plans to do to address any perceived vulnerabilities, weaknesses, or gaps on automated systems in the post-WikiLeaks environment. According to the document, these steps include figuring out which employees might be most inclined to leak classified documents by using psychiatrists and sociologists to assess their trustworthiness. The memo also suggests that agencies require all their employees to report any contacts with members of the news media they might have. Well, clearly, it's not working so well. And I'm sure there are one or two people in that government agency who would like to do in their boss, which, by the way, is a subtle segue to the next guest on this program. You know, killing your boss may be the most effective technique for anger management. Former Simpsons animator Tom Winkler runs WhackYourBoss.com, a web game in which a disgruntled office worker must find 20 ways to kill his boss using the items in his cubicle. I have to admit, it's gory fun. Tom is on the line with us right now via Skype-to-Skype communication. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Peter.
Nice to have you back on the program with us. I had you on the old radio show when there were only 17 ways to kill your boss, so you've come up with a few more, I see.
Oh, yes. That's part of the business plan.
Now, when I spoke to you the last time, we were discussing the fact that this game had just come out, and I'm wondering what has changed besides the additional three ways of killing your boss. What has changed for you in the period of time, either pluses or minuses, when it comes to people's reaction to this game, Whack Your Boss?
Well, it still gets tons of traffic. I have the game on several other portal sites, which funnel traffic then back to my site. And that's all good. It keeps the numbers up. But I have to admit that the web is changing and it's a little harder to get sponsors for such ultra violent content.
I can imagine how difficult that would be. What is the reaction of people who play the game? I mean, do you get emails from people who either love it or hate it?
Oh, they mostly people absolutely love it. And, you know, it does have the spiritual ending where he meditates at the end. So, you know, there's always that angle as well. Oh, I did do a lot of work and submitting it to Apple as an app. And they took the time to call me and tell me, don't ever submit something like this again. Thank you. And don't even try to submit it with green blood and call it Zombie Boss. They were like, this qualifies completely as something we don't. And they didn't even send me an email. Normally they would send an email, and I think they didn't even want it like a paper trail. They called me and told me verbally, no, thank you.
Now, I'm very anal retentive, so I keep complete records. And I checked my records and found out that I had you on the old radio program in May of 2009. And it was in August of 2009 where I got whacked by my boss. So there's something to be said for that. I seem to enjoy the game even more now than I did when it first came out several years ago.
I'm grateful for your tragedy.
Now, you added more ways to kill your boss on the game since I last spoke to you. Are you planning on adding yet more?
Oh, yes, I'm working on several right now. And for your listeners, just as a quick reminder, what I do is the cubicle is there, and our hero, you can click on an item in the cubicle, and our hero picks it up and beats the boss to death with it. But what I've always done is that the items in the cubicle are only items that would really be in a cubicle. So there's no axes, there's no guns. It's only like if you truly lost your temper and reached for the first item you could see, you might pick up the fax machine or a phone or a stapler. So I always, whenever I add items, I always try to add things that would normally be in a cubicle.
Now, when I spoke to you the last time, and as I said in the intro, you're a former Simpsons animator. So bring us up to date with what you've been doing over the last little while besides finding creative ways of killing your boss.
Well, submitting the app was a big deal, and that failed. And that's okay. My psychiatrist says to repeat, that's okay. And since then, I'm actually working on something. It's almost a little bit of a secret. Maybe we could do an interview in a couple months. But I'm going to be doing something video, duty.com, the original website, the potty humor website, in 1997, way back in the olden days. Got popular by my doing shocking, funny potty humor every day in the form of an animated GIF, and that led ultimately a few years later to me launching whackyourboss.com. And so now I'm going to get back into the daily content again, but I'm going to be using the new tools, the new mediums that are available, which is these great new video cameras and this place called YouTube, where you can, you know, upload as many videos as you want per day. And I'm designing this ability to do a daily video show where, you know, there'll be two or three or four updates a day. I can make them wherever I am. I can shoot them on my iPhone and upload them from wherever I am. And I have the power to move traffic from Whack Your Boss and from Duty.com, which gets about 20,000 people a day. I can, you know, basically front load this new project and get a lot of eyeballs to it. And guess what? It's going to be more rated G. It's going to be wholesome in a playful way. It's another side of me. And, you know, David Lynch is somebody who did things like wild, crazy stuff like Blue Velvet. And then later on, he did a rated G film called The Straight Story. So I have other sides to myself that I am in touch with, and I'm happy to do something now that will be a little more rated G. And, you know, and it's wholesome and rated G sounds so vanilla, but it's truly something I want to do, and it's something I'm excited about. So I'll keep you posted on that.
Well, when it comes to whackyourboss.com, friends and family of yours who see this website and see the success that it's become, when they see what happens when the 20 ways to kill your boss, do they say, oh, gee, that's really gory? Or do they say, well, that's Tom?
More the latter.
Really?
They say, oh, that's Tom. You know, and the truth is different kinds. But yeah, I have friends that absolutely love what I do. And I have friends, especially women oftentimes, they'll express, like, what do they call it, damning me with faint praise?
Yes.
Where they'll say, that's really good, Tom. You know, good for you. You're so talented. I would just love to see you, you know, do other things also.
Now, you talked earlier about technology and how things you're going to be using some of the new medium. As an animator, how has technology changed for you and made life either easier or more difficult, if possible?
Oh, it's made it. My life's been amazing. I mean, I'm so grateful I was born in this era where we can do animation on our desktops. I mean, when I was a kid, I did animation with a 8mm movie camera that took film that my grandfather gave me. That you had to shoot things one frame at a time. You had to draw them one frame at a time on paper, or you had to move the clay creatures one frame at a time. And then you had to send out the 3-minute roll of film, get it processed, get it back, and then see what you did. You know, you get to see then the life that you gave your drawings. Only then could you project it and see it. And then if you wanted to show it people, you had to go, you know, get a darkened room, invite people over, and project it on a screen. I mean, this era I'm living in is unbelievable in terms of, you know, I can animate on my desktop, and then I can basically just hit, you know, enter, put it up on the website, and have the world see it. I mean, it's a truly, truly blessed time for me to be living.
With the game whackyourboss.com, again, 20 different ways to kill your boss. Do you have a favorite?
I do like the scissors, which I'll describe it for the audience. How about that?
Please.
Our hero calmly, some of the objects he picks up very quickly and bludgeons the boss to death. And in this one, when you click on the scissors, he calmly turns to them. He takes them out of their little holder. He opens them up slowly and then quickly slices across and catches the boss right in the throat. And I took a lot of work, like in the old cartoons, Coyote and Roadrunner and stuff, where the blood, of course, there was no blood in Coyote and Roadrunner, but stylistically, the blood comes out of the throat, hits our hero so hard and the whole wall that it covers our hero, and then it leaves a silhouette on the wall where there's no blood in the body shape of our hero. So we've got the wall covered in blood, and then we've got basically like a body-shaped silhouette of our hero because his body blocked the blood. And that somehow, as physics goes, the movement of fluid from one scene to another, it was a fun scene to animate, and it very viscerally people enjoy it as well.
I think it has the largest fluid count of any of the 20, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, quart for quart it is, yes.
And have you had the opportunity with the success of the game, and as I said, you've added 3 more since I last spoke to you, have you had suggestions from people saying, oh, how about this?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's a golf club that I've put in there for months that's been there that you can't click on, and I put it there more as a teaser. Because I think maybe a person might have a golf club and a ball in their cubicle to sort of do a little putting while they're not working. And people definitely email saying, dude, you should use the golf club. Of course, I imagine they talk like that. Generally, a lot of people, I think I'm going to do this, actually. They want me to strangle the boss with the telephone cord, you know.
Something to look forward to. People can check out the game. What's the easiest way of finding it? Because I know there's several ways of getting to it.
If you just go to whackyourboss.com, WHACK. And I also own WACK for those who spell whack differently.
There you go. So it's whackyourboss.com, and people can enjoy the 20 different ways of offing their employer. I thank you very much, Tom, for being on the program with us once again.
You're welcome, Peter. Thank you. Have a great new year.
Tom Winkler, creator of the extremely funny and violent online game, whackyourboss.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0073, and you'll find links to the site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones. What a way to begin the year. The competition between the 50 states for every new job out there just got very interesting. I'm talking about an idea the governor of Texas has for ending frivolous lawsuits there. Some believe it could attract thousands of new jobs to the Lone Star State. His idea? Create a loser pay system in the courts. It's used throughout the world, but plaintiff lawyers here have worked hard to keep it out of America. Under loser pays, plaintiffs who sue someone and lose have to pay the legal bills of their opponent. It's very effective at eliminating abusive lawsuits, and it's one of the boldest ideas I've ever seen. Now, let's be fair. The personal injury lawyers who have made a fortune off the current system will spend millions to defeat this plan. However, a few years ago, Texas Governor Rick Perry was able to enact bold reforms to reduce lawsuit abuse against medical professionals there, and it attracted waves of new doctors and improved health care. Learn more about his loser pays plan at my website, bobderigojones.com.
What are they saying about if the rains don't cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabbie, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And joining us once again on the program is Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabbie, who shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello, and it's the beginning of the new year.
Yes, happy new year to you and yours. Did you spend any time in Times Square?
No, absolutely not. You only do it once in a lifetime. You never do it again because it's usually, although it wasn't this year, biting cold, you're in a big crowd, there's no place to make a pee, no place to get anything to eat, and the guy standing next to you has probably just had a garlic pizza. So it's not the kind of thing you do more than once. I did it the last time, I think it was in 1921. That was the last time I did it.
Okay, now there was a lot of snow in the New York area, and they moved it out of Times Square in time. But speaking of the snow, I understand there was some issues on the practice of saving parking spots?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's something that has gone on for years. I mean, the people seem to think that if they park in a certain spot and then they drive away from that spot, they can leave something in that spot, and then presumably when they come back, it's their spot. It's absolute insane reasoning, and it invariably ends up in all kinds of fights and arguments. In this particular case, because we had a lot of snow, a lot of people dug their cars out of the spot. Well, now they felt, having put all that effort into digging themselves out of that spot, that was really their spot. And when they came back 3 hours later, they expected nobody to be in it. Well, that didn't happen. And of course, in most instances, there were arguments and fights and things like that. But listen, some people celebrate winter wonderlands in one way. New Yorkers celebrate winter wonderlands in another way.
Mm. And still with the snow, I understand even some strippers were upset with the snow, or more importantly, where the snow was put.
Well, yeah, but you know what it was? I mean, if you really examine the story very carefully, it was just faked by the media. And what I mean by that is they showed a bunch of strippers, women whose occupation is taking off their clothes, standing in especially tight dresses with black mesh stockings, ruby red lipstick, blue eyeshadow, and stiletto heels outside their club that they couldn't get into because there was snow piled up outside, which is absolutely ridiculous because that's not the way that hookers go to work. Hookers go to work, at least the ones that I know, go wearing jeans, sneakers, and a sweatshirt. So obviously, they went into the strip place, changed into their, how shall I put this, working clothes, and then came out so the media could take corny pictures.
Ah, okay. And by the way, you do note that at one point you said hookers, not strippers. Are you confusing the two?
No, because I don't mean to insult that member of those members of your demographics who might be in that particular thing, but it's a fairly common hookup between the two occupations.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. And speaking of the electronic media and the like, I understand that as far as Twitter is concerned, some researchers have found out that you people in New York aren't happy.
Yeah, but remember, Peter, you don't mind if I call you Peter, they're talking about New Yorkers who Twitter, okay? And people who Twitter and people who Facebook and people who sit in Starbucks all day with their little laptops are all in bad moods anyway. So they weren't saying that New Yorkers are always in a bad mood. They were saying people who fiddle with their computers day and night are in the bad mood. So, and I think that's true, because if you walk into a Starbucks, usually you see a bunch of very disgruntled, miserable, unhappy people who just have their nose in their little electronic wizardry. So, no, it's not New Yorkers. A correction is necessary. It's Twitter New Yorkers that are always in a bad mood.
Okay, but I use Twitter and I use Facebook all the time. I'm always in my computer.
Well, that's why you're in a bad mood.
I'm always happy. I'm always happy.
Yeah, right. I can sense your malcontent and discontent at the present time.
I'm just a happy, happy camper at all times. Life is bliss. Now, I understand that at Coney Island, some people are very upset, speaking about upset New Yorkers, about
an attraction.
An attraction. That's the word I was looking for. An attraction that has been leveled?
Yeah, well, here's the deal. Years ago, if you went to Coney Island, which is our amusement park area on the Atlantic Ocean in a corner of Brooklyn, you could see things like the bearded lady, the two-headed goat, you know, all of the giant person weighing 800 pounds, you know, all that kind of stuff. Well, through the years, all of that has been eliminated because it was considered in poor taste, not politically correct. So it's become kind of sterile, sort of like the way Times Square is, kind of sterile, like Disney World. Well, there was one attraction still there called Shoot the Freak, in which you would go there, they give you a paint gun, and there's a guy running around in a field in front of you that you shoot with the paint gun and hit him and get him all covered in paint. And he's not really an ugly guy, but he tries to look ugly guy. I mean, he wouldn't get A's for being a freak. But anyway, it's an amusement thing, and there's no harm out of it. Well, they closed up the other night. They all went home from their attraction. They came back in the morning. It was gone. It seems that the person or company that's going to be redeveloping Coney Island so that it will be completely sterile and boring like Times Square just leveled that whole little section there to get rid of the guy. Well, the city ruled that you can't do that, and because of that, the guy who did the bulldozing and all of that is going to have to pay a fine, and I think he's also has to give the freak guy $5,000, and it will reopen this week, presumably with a new paint gun or something or other.
And I also understand that you guys down below the 49th parallel are finally catching up to us here in Canada with the cigarette packaging.
Well, no, because we're going to go back. See, what happened is the city passed a law that in every bodega, every deli, every grocery store that was selling cigarettes had to hang up pictures which showed people in the final stages of lung cancer. I mean, really scary. Well, a judge ruled that the city couldn't make the people do that, and he ordered that the signs be taken down. So that's what the media concentrated on. To them, that was the big thing, and they really missed the boat. And the reason they missed the boat is there's a terrible problem going on in the United States now where our judges, whether you agree with ever the particular decision, have become lawmakers. They're being very proactive when they shouldn't. In other words, you had a legislative body, the New York City Council, duly elected by the citizens, voted to have this particular law enacted. And again, I say, whether you agree with it or you don't agree with it, it was enacted. Now along comes a judge, one person, who wasn't voted into office, who's appointed for life, who is invariably a political hack of either the Republicans or the Democrats, and he or she says, no, I don't like the law, I'm going to change it. And that, my friend, is happening all over the United States, and I wish they would have concentrated on that aspect of the story rather than the anti-cancer whatever.
Mm. Well, speaking of salacious lawmaking and the like, I know you have a new governor now, and oh my, a new governor who's living in sin?
Yeah, well, you got to remember that the governor we had was a fellow named Elliot Spitzer. And Elliot was caught running around with strippers and hookers, or strippers slash hookers, on company time, doing a lot of very funky things. So he got thrown out of office. We then got in the guy named Patterson. And Patterson came in. He was from the Harlem machine of Charlie Rangel, really disreputable, terrible people. He was a lieutenant governor, so they turned the governorship over to him. And on his first day, he announces to the world that both he and his wife have an open marriage and they go to other people whenever they feel like it. Just the kind of guy you want as governor of your state. Now, along comes Andrew Cuomo, the son of Mario Cuomo, who was once called by Bill Clinton a mafia-type person, because he also was governor. Along comes him, and he's now moved into the executive mansion with his girlfriend. Well, it's not a big deal, I guess, in these modern times. Maybe I'm an old-fashioned fella who thinks if you have a kid and you're living with a woman, she ought to be your wife. But that's, I'm old-fashioned. But it just is symptomatic of the fact that we seem to be getting really a lot of sex-crazed governors.
Or maybe the media is just doing a better job at discovering that the governors are always sex-crazed to start with.
Well, listen, I there was the old story that they used to say during the 60s, you'd rather have a president who was interested in sex rather than war.
There you go. Absolutely. And on that note, sir, I think we'll end it there, and I'll say to you, best of the new year. And if anybody is in the New York area and wants to track you down, how can they go about doing so?
Well, they can go to my website, which is Gabby, GABBY.com, and if they want any information about New York City, the truth, as I would say, then all they got to do is just contact me. I love answering questions about New York City.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from New York City, here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of the Stuff File program, but we do have an idiot of the day we'll get to in a moment, and one more Stuff File story, which is this. In Great Falls, Montana, police pulled over Jonathan Ray Gonzalez during a fairly routine traffic stop. Knowing there were three outstanding warrants for his arrest, Gonzalez decided to give the officer his cousin's name, Timothy Michael Coop Jr., hoping this would fool the officer. Too bad he didn't know Tim had an outstanding warrant of his own, too, for arrest. And after officers arrested Gonzalez, they did a routine search and turned up a half a gram of meth in his jacket pocket. And because he later confessed and gave his real name to officers, a charge of issuing a false report to law enforcement was also added. Now, you might think this guy might make the idiot of the day for doing this, but he didn't. This next guy did.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A tiny mistake has been the undoing of many a clever crook, but unlike an alleged robber arrested in Germany, most managed not to fall asleep at the scene of the crime. The 26-year-old man broke into a career advice center one night and completed several trips taking electronics, food, and sweets back to his apartment. But the effort was clearly too strenuous for the man. Returning to the scene of the crime for one more swag grab, he fell asleep on the office floor where police found him still snoozing the next morning. Handcuffs were slapped on the sleepy burglar, and he was taken in. The irony here is that he was breaking into a career advice center. Perhaps he should have gotten some career advice instead. Why would someone break into a place several times in one night to steal stuff, but then fall asleep at the scene of the crime? One reason, and one reason only, He's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0073. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the What's On page. Just check for the corresponding program number, and again, it's 0073. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PAHolder and at Twitter at twitter.com/PAHolder. Don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show, on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, aboard China Airlines, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, Media Corps in Singapore, and WSTJ, St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, God. I always screw it up.